Senator Joan Lovely is joining us here on MSONewsSports.com. And Senator, welcome. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be back.
Well, it's been a while, but, you know, another session underway here and some new committee assignments. And we won't go into all of the committees, but just a quick thought from you on your committee assignments, and then we'll get into some of the specific legislation as well. But what can you share with us about committee assignments for Senator Lovely this year?
Well, thank you for the ask. I am really proud to be named as an assistant majority leader again in the Senate. This is my third term being named as an assistant majority leader and gives me the opportunity to work very closely with the president and the leadership team on moving budget priorities, policy priorities for this upcoming session. We'll work very closely with every member in the Senate to be able to prioritize. You know, different parts of the Commonwealth have different needs, and then there are the broad needs. But we want to be able to make sure we cover all of that for the membership. And so I'm really excited about that. And just another committee that I have been reappointed to is the Senate Committee on Global Warming and Climate Change. Really important for what's happening across our world, but really also for what's happening here in the northeastern part of the United States, and particularly in Massachusetts with offshore wind development. We're looking strongly, and it's going to happen, for the Port of Salem to have a marshalling port here to be able to provide offshore wind support out to the Gulf of Maine. And there's only currently one offshore wind port in the United States, in New Bedford. Salem will be online probably in the next 2 or 3 years, and we'll support that effort as well.
Yeah, that's a big thing, you know, for jobs as well, I guess, in Salem too, right?
Salem and across the North Shore and the region, some really good, high-paying jobs. We're already reaching out to Essex Tech and the community colleges to make sure we have the right curriculum in place to make sure that we're training these individuals for really good jobs that are coming up.
All right. But I want to get into some of this legislation with you in a moment. But I know you're active in the district. You're attending events, hosting events, all these different things. So any events in the last week or two that you could share with us that you've been at here on the North Shore?
Terrific event that just happened on Monday, just a couple of days ago, a groundbreaking over at the former Briscoe Middle School. So that used to be Beverly High School way back in the day. It's a 100-year-old building, and it's going to be converted into 85 units of 55-plus-year-old affordable housing with 6 live/work studios for artists. So artists working right on site and living right on site in their studio apartment. Our new Lieutenant Governor, Kim Driscoll, attended together with Undersecretary Jennifer Maddox from DHCD. Rep. Paracella was there, and Mayor Cahill. And it is really a strong effort between Harbor Light Community Partners, that's Andrew DeFranza, and Beacon Properties. And so we're really looking forward to seeing this building in its renaissance. The thousands of students that went through that educational building, that high school, middle school, and perhaps some of those seniors will be actual students that went there. So really wonderful. This is exactly what we need to be doing with a housing crisis, especially for our aging population. There'll be on-site services, and they're actually going to keep the auditorium open to the public, so some public venue there as well. Really exciting. And just quickly, another meeting that I had just today, again in Beverly at the middle school, with Lieutenant Governor Driscoll, so pleased that she's in the district, relative to, again, climate change. There is a Green Beverly initiative at Beverly High School with the students. So we had middle school students there, high school students, and talking about what the future looks like for our students going forward and how we need to make decisions today that will positively affect them in the future. So it's really exciting.
You know, Senator, I've just finished a series of interviews with the 5 candidates running for mayor in Salem. And one of the questions I asked them was, what's the impact, if you will, having the former mayor, now the lieutenant governor, you know, down in Boston at the State House? And I figured I might as well ask you the same question. Are there pieces of legislation or little things out there that you think might be helpful to have, you know, a friendly face down at the State House in the executive branch?
Well, I will tell you, I have worked with Mayor Driscoll since she became mayor. We were city councilors together before she was mayor, and now me as senator and her as mayor, and now as she as lieutenant governor. She is so experienced. She brings just a wealth and a breadth of knowledge to this new position as lieutenant governor. She certainly knows the issues that are really important to the district, particularly to Salem. But she brings that all that knowledge and value to the entire Commonwealth. She knows municipal government backwards and forwards. It doesn't get any better. She's such a strong partner for Governor Healey, and we're just I'm tickled pink that she's our lieutenant governor, and that we have worked closely together. We will continue to work closely for the district, but for the entire Commonwealth. So she's really terrific, and again, they're going to make such strong partners. Really exciting.
All right, I want you to share with our listeners some of the bills that you've been working on down at the State House in the Senate. And one was is a disability bill. I think we might have talked about this before. I certainly talked with somebody else about this a few months ago, and they dropped your name as, you know, working on the bill. But tell me about that disability bill that you've been working on.
Sure. Yeah, the Senate actually, just this last session, it's supported decision making. And so what supported decision making is if someone needs help, a senior or someone with an intellectual disability, but they really don't qualify for guardianship. Guardianships are very stringent. They go through the courts. You're removing someone's civil rights. It's really someone who really can't make decisions for themselves. This bill is intended for someone who can make decisions for themselves, but they need some assistance. So it's called Supported Decision Making. We actually did get it through the Senate this session, and we hope to work with the House last session, and we hope to work with the House this session to get it to the governor's desk. It's a really terrific bill. Come with some training, and it would be the person would rely on a trusted individual. It could be a loved one. It could be a spouse. It could be, you know, anyone that they trust. And again, it puts all the belts and suspenders in place, and it doesn't move to a full guardianship. So very exciting, a lot of support for it, especially within the disability and senior community. So we will be moving that and hopefully get it to the governor's desk pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. Are there other disability bills, or was that the main one?
Well, you know, we do have another bill, which I think is really important. So with parents that have either a physical disability or an intellectual disability, and they find themselves in the family or juvenile court for some reason, we want to make sure that the courts don't hold this disability against these parents when it comes to custody, when it comes to being able to parent these children. What we'd like to see the court do is to put in an appropriate accommodation. So we're working with the courts to make that happen. Because, again, parents with disabilities should be able to parent their children just as anybody would. And so we think this is a really good bill. It, too, has broad support to be able to make it happen.
All right. We did discuss a few topics before starting. And speaking of children, there's a diaper bill, but it makes a lot of sense. But tell us about that one.
So it's a diaper benefits pilot program, you know, working with our local food pantries to make sure that we have diapers available in all sizes for all infants and toddlers. Currently, SNAP benefits do not cover diapers, and diapers are very expensive. I now have a granddaughter, so a 2.5-year-old, so I'm back in that diaper business again, helping my daughter and her husband. But they're so expensive, and especially for families that are really on the margins. We've heard families that are reusing diapers, trying to recycle disposable diapers. It's not good. It's a public health issue for the infant. So we want to be able to make sure that, A, we can get diapers covered by SNAP benefits, and then that we can get diapers into the different food pantries to make them available. And we are seeing our food pantries extremely busy. Right here in Salem, the Salem Food Pantry does a food a satellite location one day a week, and they have 250 individuals come in every one day a week to get their food for the week, fresh vegetables and fruits and really good wholesome food. But just tells us how dire the need is, and diapers are right in there as well.
Well, I know in your district there's a number of really outstanding pantries and service organizations that address those needs, and they're like you just mentioned, the demand for their services is just exploded in the last year or two, and was always on the rise as well prior to that as well. But I guess that speaks also to housing and homelessness. So what's happening at the State House on those issues?
So housing is the number one issue that we are hearing in our legislative offices. I get, you know, many, many calls each week. People are just so housing insecure. They're on the margins. They're being evicted. We're still working through COVID with a lot of people who were not able to meet their rental obligations. And so we're still trying to assist people in that regard. We are here in Massachusetts, and the governor just put out her budget last week. So both the House and Senate will be working on their budgets over the upcoming weeks. But the MRVP program, that's the Massachusetts Rental Voucher Program, we have created our own voucher program here in Massachusetts out of the sheer need. So we actually want to codify that in law. We budget for it every year, but it is not a law, so I have a bill to codify that program into law and reauthorize it in the budget each year. And the governor makes it a concentration in her budget as well. One other program that we have that's not codified in law, but I can get it funded, is the HomeWorks program. And when I first ran for the Senate, I visited a couple of shelters, and that's when we were placing people in motels and hotels across Massachusetts. And there was a particular one in Danvers that I went to visit, and I saw the children playing in the oil and gasoline-soaked parking lot, laying on the parking lot and drawing chalk, you know, around their little bodies. And I was so upset about that I worked with the YMCAs, and we put together a HomeWorks program. And why were those little children in the parking lot school age? Because they had come home from school, and could not stay in the after-school programs because there was no transportation. The bus left at 2:30, so they were on the bus back to the shelter. So we actually get $800,000 in the budget every year to make sure that these little ones can get to those, can stay after school, play basketball with their peers, homework club, art club, whatever it might be, and then get that bus ride home back to the shelter or wherever they may be sheltering in place at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. When all their other peers do. It's just so much better for kids. Again, we get that funded every year because there's a need. We still have a need for that. Pretty proud of that bill.
Yeah. You're talking about kids and schools and the environment. Now, I believe you worked on a drinking water bill a few years ago now, but it's still progressing, or there's another bill or regarding school drinking water and safe drinking water?
Yes. Yep. So we do have a bill, Safe Drinking Water in Schools, and this is this bill has been evolving over the last couple of terms. I had filed it with former representative from Marblehead, Lori Ehrlich, and I have refiled it with and the House has as well. And what this does is we've actually, some of these school buildings in Massachusetts are very old when they used a lead service to provide water to the building. So no amount of lead in water or exposure to children is safe. None. Zero. So we have created this bill and a funding source to be able to replace the taps in schools. I'll give you, for example, Brockton did this about 3 or 4 years ago. Brockton, a very big school system, they went in and either replaced or they shut off all the water bubblers in the affected school buildings. And they replace those with standing water bubblers. So like you would see, you know, in an office setting, and to make sure that there was good, clean water being provided to the students and the teachers. And then again, in the cafeterias and in the kitchens, to make sure that clean water is coming in. Nothing is coming in through a lead line. So we have identified through a study many schools and working with these school districts to be able to replace these out again with a funding stream to be able to do it.
You know, I don't have the name of the committee right in front of me, but it's a new committee that you've been assigned to in the Senate. It's a juvenile plus adult service, juvenile justice. And I apologize for not, it'll be on our post, by the way, that it's written out, but I just don't have it in front of me. What can you tell me about that committee, although, albeit, I understand, a brand new committee?
It's a brand new committee in the Senate. It's the Senate Committee on Juvenile and Emerging Adult Justice, building on our criminal justice reform and how do we support juveniles and emerging adults, adults coming either cycling in or cycling out of the justice system. How do we keep them from going into the justice system? Working very closely with our, you know, district attorneys, our sheriffs, our police departments. It is a new committee. I'm looking forward to working on this committee as a new member and waiting to see what types of bills come into the committee, and we'll get to work on it. So more to come.
Yeah. Speaking of, emerging adults, if you will, what is your take on the story that came out last week, I believe it was, with free community college for adults 25 and up, if they meet certain qualifications? Kind of an interesting an item to put, the governor put in her budget.
Well, I think it's a terrific idea, and the Senate president actually, when she gave her opening remarks this session, also said that she supports this as well. So the Senate is looking to do this as well and be supportive. Education is the equalizer. When you have your education, you can apply for better paying jobs. You have a better quality of life. And the education is just not available to everybody. And what are the barriers? The barriers are cost, accessibility. Maybe you have a family. You work a couple of jobs. I too, was one of those adult learners that went back to school when my children were in middle school, 6 years, nights and weekends, from 2000 to 2006, and I graduated with my bachelor's degree from Salem State University in political science. It took me a long time. I was really committed to do it, and I did it as best as I could under the time frame. Again, a working mother, and I got it done. And so we want to really be supportive, especially at the community college level. This is really where a lot of students can really find their way, what they want to do, get the training and the education, and then, you know, be better providers because they've got that education, they can get really good jobs.
Yeah, and obviously, and you must hear this as well, because I know you're connected into all of this, that employers are really seeking qualified individuals. That's a difficult, they're finding that difficult. I think I'm right on that.
You're absolutely right. And so, again, you know, I'm going to go back to our vocational schools. Essex Tech, Salem High School has a really great vocational program going right now where they're teaching culinary arts and graphic design and marine technology, especially now with the Port of Salem moving to a marshalling facility. We're going to need some really good marine techs. People who can work on these large ships. Those are really good jobs. And so I'm really proud that Essex Tech has such a robust programming. Salem High School is following suit. Peabody High School has their vocational program. Not everybody can get into the tech, but there's a lot of students that are interested in this type of training and learning. So let's bring these back to our local high schools as well and make this available. Manufacturing, we just can't get enough people who are, you know, interested in manufacturing. We can get them. I'm sorry, there's a strong interest. I didn't mean to quite say it like that. There's strong interest, and now we are providing the training because, again, really good, high-paying jobs right here in our Commonwealth.
Well, Senator Lovely, I've taken up a lot of time here, but it's been very informative. But I want to leave you kind of an open-ended question or a chance to share anything else with us, something I didn't ask you about, a piece of legislation that we should be talking about and the North Shore listeners should be able to hear about. But what, anything else you want to share with us?
Sure, absolutely. I'm just really so proud to be able to do this work for the 2nd Essex District, which is now Beverly, Danvers, Peabody, and Salem. Topsfield is no longer in the district. And, you know, one committee that I was appointed to, it's a new committee, is the Joint Committee on Agriculture. It used to be combined with Environment and Natural Resources, and it was peeled off. So it's the Joint Committee on Agriculture. I'm a small farmer at heart. I do have an associate's degree in large animal science. If anybody knows me, I raise ducks. I show them at the Topsfield Fair, just a little hobby that I have. But I think it's really important that we're able to, in urban settings especially, to be able to grow our own food, to be able to support that because we know that food is expensive. And so I'm looking forward to working with this drink committee, particularly in the more urban settings, to be able to support whether you want to raise some chickens, whatever it might be. And so I look forward to that work and also supporting agriculture across the Commonwealth in general. It's very important that we have that in our state. So look forward to that work.
Well, you know, your district encompasses, that mixture. You have, two farms in Peabody, if I'm not too decent, or city-owned, two farms in Peabody. Obviously, Danvers has some farming. And then, of course, the urban piece that you're talking about in Salem as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really important that we support our farming community. So no matter big, small, tiny, whatever it might be. So I'm really looking forward to that work.
All right. So tell me more about your ducks. What kind of ducks do you have? There must be a specialty, right?
I do have they are call ducks, C-A-L-L, call ducks. They are the bantam of the duck world. So they're really small. So they make really great pets. They're super friendly. They're domesticated. You can pick them up and love them. They're great with kids. And then why are they called call ducks? Because back in the 1800s over in Europe, the hunters would use the ducks, the females. They have a very loud quack to lure the wild ducks down into the ponds for hunting. They no longer do that, thankfully. Now, these are just beautiful little ducks. They're really sweet. And I really enjoy them, and again, I show them at the Topsfield Fair just as a hobby. But they're really wonderful. And again, they make great pets. So anybody who would like to have some call ducks, let me know. I'm happy to teach you all about them and how much fun they are, especially for families.
Well, next time I'm at the Topsfield Fair, I'm definitely going to check out the duck section for sure. Yeah. Now, any ribbons, Senator?
Yes. I do ribbon every year. I do. Some of my ducks have gotten blue ribs, first, second, third. Yep, we do ribbon. So it's nice. That's gratifying. I don't do it for that. It's just for the fun. I have spent a lot of time at the Topsfield Fair because of my Aggie degree. I spend every year there, and I'm roaming the barns. So you don't usually find me in the midway. You usually find me over in the cow barn or the sheep barn, but certainly in the poultry barn. So, and this year I actually showed my mother had gifted me before she passed away her Christmas cactus. It is almost 60 years old. It is enormous, and I did show it at the fair this year, and I did blue ribbon with it because it's just so unique and big. And if you know me, I'd like to have a green thumb as best as I can.
Well, that's terrific information. My midway days are over too, Senator. I think that, I'm not saying I won't wander down there, but they're probably pretty much over, I'm thinking. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, Senator, award-winning Senator Joan Lovely has been with us here. And Senator, thanks so much for taking some time to join us. And hopefully we can check back again soon.
Sounds great, Bill. Much appreciated. All the best.
Yeah. Senator Joan Lovely with us here on MSONewsSports.com.